It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to the Mick Clifford podcast with the Irish Examiner. Now, we have at various points in this podcast touched on the centenary commemorations of the revolutionary period. This particular time, though, 100 years ago, was highly significant in that it heralded what was the most vicious period of the Civil War. Or, I suppose, if you like, the darkest hour before the dawn, when it all, thankfully, ended a couple of months later. The worst excesses in March 1923 on both sides occurred in County Kerry, where for various reasons things got really, really bad. On Sunday next, the centenary of the Ballyseedy massacre, which we'll talk about in a minute, is taking place. And over the following weeks, there will be events commemorating other tragedies from that time in the first half, even stretching on a bit longer, of March in 23 in the conflict, which, we have to remember, culminated with the birth of the state as we know it today. Joining me to discuss the centenaries and how we have and continue to remember these events is historian Eoin O'Shea, who's written the definitive account of the Civil War in Kerry, No Middle Path. Eoin, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Mick.
Eoin, just for listeners who won't be familiar with the background, would you set out where things were at in the Civil War in the country in general, say around the beginning of March, and then what the story was in Kerry?
Well, by that time, by the spring of 23 and into March 23, in many parts of the country, the war was over to all intents and purposes. And what was known as the Munster Republic, which included counties inside a sort of a notional line between Limerick and Waterford, which was the anti-treaty stronghold in the earlier months of the war, that line had essentially moved back or retreated to Kerry, and I suppose sort of symbolically and in reality to Kerry was sort of and those on the anti-treaty side in Kerry saw themselves as the last line of defence almost, or the last bastion of anti-treaty and Republican sentiment. What does happen in the early months of 23, and particularly in March, is there's an increasing level of frustration, I think, in government circles and within the Free State Army about the fact that the war is still going on, particularly in Kerry. And there's an increasing impatience at Cabinet and amongst the Kerry command of the army about the protracted nature of the war, when, as I say, the conflict had all but ended in most other parts of the country. And that frustration and perhaps embarrassment, maybe to some extent, manifested itself in a number of ways. The Dublin Guard of the Free State Army, as they were known, which came to Kerry in a number of seaborne landings in August 22, were carrying out a policy of executions in the normal sense, in terms of those that were prisoners or those in custody who were found guilty of various crimes under the various pieces of legislation, but also a series of extrajudicial killings, which to many suggested that senior figures in the Free State Army in Kerry were out of control. There was an increased viciousness and an increased visceral element to the war, as I say, because of those frustrations. And because by this time you have a sort of a guerrilla warfare in place with the army in command of the large urban centres in the county, the large towns and villages, with the anti-treaty IRA in the ascendancy in rural Kerry, you know, and there was certainly an unfamiliarity with some in the army in Kerry about the geography and topography of the county, whereas the IRA were obviously more au fait with the rural and remoter areas. So you have this sort of a standoff or a deadlock almost at this point. And that creates all sorts of tensions that manifested themselves in very violent ways.
Yes, and you mentioned extrajudicial killings, sort of quasi-executions. My own granduncle was subjected to that on the 5th of March in South Kerry after a gun battle after they'd surrendered. He was summarily shot. And then the day after that, in Knocknagoshal in North Kerry, there was an incident that really set off what were, I suppose, in some ways, the seminal outrages of the conflict.
Correct. Those events in the early hours of the 6th of March at Knocknagoshal had cataclysmic consequences, really. What occurred there, in summary, is that the IRA lured a group of Free State Army soldiers from Castle Island, from their barracks to Castle Island, to Barranarig Wood near Knocknagoshal in the northeast of the county. On the pretense that, you know, based on a tip-off that it was an IRA arms dump, and there were residual animosities between some in the IRA locally and those who had joined the Free State Army, people like Paddy Pats O'Connor, who had fallen out with he and his family had fallen out with the IRA locally, and Paddy Pats O'Connor joined the army in Castle Island. So there were sort of personal as well as other animosities at play. But the soldiers who were lured to Knocknagoshal in the early hours of the 6th of March 23 went in search of, in the early hours of the morning, went in search of this alleged IRA arms dump. And while they were in the process of removing some stones and rubble from around the site they believed to be the arms dump, a trip mine which had been placed there by the IRA was detonated, and five Free State Army soldiers were killed. They sustained quite horrendous injuries. The Paddy Pats O'Connor that I mentioned was decapitated, and his head was found the following morning in a stream by a local schoolgirl. One of those who was blown up and who survived, Joseph O'Brien, a private from Dublin, had both his legs amputated and suffered the loss of the sight of his eyes. And it was the highest death toll in the Free State Army in 6 months during the Civil War. And the reaction, of course, which is what led to what followed, the reaction of Paddy O'Daly, the senior army commandant in Tralee and in Kerry, indeed, was one of fury and what Dermot Ferret has described as a lust for revenge. The reaction within the army was one that prompted the events of what followed over subsequent days.
Yes, and the first one then was Ballyseedy, probably the most notorious one.
Yeah.
This was within 24 hours of Knocknagoshal, nine prisoners were taken from Balmullen Barracks, was it?
Ballymullen, yes. Paddy O'Daly, who I mentioned, decided following Knocknagoshal that henceforth, what he was quoted as saying, to prevent the wholesale slaughter of our men, that if there were any alleged arms dumps, or if there were any obstructions along roadways, or if there were barricades placed on roadways by the IRA, that it was IRA prisoners themselves who would be taken from prisons and used to remove such obstructions. And those barricades and obstructions had proved very effective in terms of preventing the Free State Army from getting about the county, and they were a common feature of the war. So on the night of the, within 24 hours of Knocknagoshal, in the early hours of the 7th of March 23, nine prisoners are tortured and beaten at Ballymullen Barracks in retaliation for what occurred at Knocknagoshal. And before they're taken from the barracks, they are shown into a room of coffins, empty coffins, some of which bear the names of the prisoners that are about to be removed from the barracks. They are taken to a couple of miles from Tralee to a place called Ballyseedy Cross, which at that time was the main road between Tralee and Killorglin. They discover there that there's a barricade across the road of stones and rubble that has been put there by the army themselves. The prisoners are tied to the mine, their hands and legs are tied. They are told to say their prayers. Stephen Fuller, who survived the explosion, described in an interview how one of the Free State Army, excuse my language, described the prisoners as Irish bastards. And Fuller noted that he was an Irishman himself, which was sort of indicative of the confused thinking at this time. So when the prisoners were tied to the mine, the Free State Army stood back and detonated an explosive within the barricade, which had been placed there by the army themselves, and blew eight of the prisoners to their deaths. Miraculously, and somehow Stephen Fuller from Kilflin managed to escape. He was blown by the force of the explosion into a nearby stream and managed over the course of subsequent hours to get away. And of course, in getting away, he took with him the truth of what happened at Ballyseedy. The official line spun by the army was that the barricade had been placed on the road by the IRA themselves, that the IRA prisoners were clearing the rubble from that site when the bomb exploded. But of course, it had been an entirely premeditated attack on behalf of the Kerry Command of the Free State Army.
Yes, and that was a horrendous night that lives long, I think, in the memory of many. And it was followed, I don't know, 24, 48 hours later by a similar outrage at a place called Countess Bridge outside Killarney.
Yes.
And then on the, I think it was the 12th of March, a few days later, another group of Free State soldiers, they landed at Carsevine by sea. They stayed there for over 24 hours, and then they went to where a number of anti-treaty prisoners were being kept in Bahawks outside Carsevine, and they took them and did the similar thing there. And as far as I recall, what was done there was they shot them first on the bases to make sure, in the legs,
yes,
to make sure that nobody would be able to escape, as had been happening in the previous two incidences. It was, I mean, that was the lowest period of the whole civil war, I'd say.
Unquestionably, you have, in essence, in terms of revenge, if you want to call it that, for Knocknagoshal, where five soldiers were killed, 17 IRA prisoners were taken from their prison cells and summarily executed extrajudicially in the name of the state. You know, ever since then, those killings have left a very, very deep scar in County Kerry. And understandably so, not least because of the number of deaths involved, but because of the horrendous effect those killings had on the families and the survivors, who invariably suffered a wide array of financial, physical, psychological and emotional traumas in the years afterwards. So it is in many ways the very lowest point of the Civil War, not just in Kerry, but I would suggest in Ireland. And it pointed to elements in the Free State Army and in the army of the newly established state that were completely out of control, but that who were not operating, it must be said, without, you know, in a sort of a vacuum. Their actions and the killing of prisoners in this way had the sanction of government and had the sanction of the Chief of Staff of the Army and the Minister for Defence, Richard Mulcahy, who insisted in the Dáil and elsewhere that the actions of his men in Kerry were he stood over the findings of the inquiry into these events, and the inquiries, of course, were nothing but a complete sham, which vindicated the Free State soldiers and which blamed the IRA for the explosions, which of course was completely untrue. And Mulcahy and the Dáil pointedly said that it was, quote, inconceivable that members of the army in Kerry would be capable of such killings. And we must bear in mind as well that W.T. Cosgrave, the head of government, was talking the language of extermination at this time, and was talking about the need, if necessary, to exterminate 10,000 Republicans if the Free State was to survive. So I think it's important not to see Paddy O'Daly and the Kerry Command as some sort of rogue operators in Kerry at this time. Certainly they were out of control. Certainly O'Daly and others in the army in Kerry had, I would suggest, sadistic and psychopathic tendencies, which one can perhaps understand based on the frustrations and the pressures they were facing in terms of the need to bring the war to a conclusion. But which one can only describe as actions beyond any sorts of norms of warfare. But I think it's important too to remember that these actions had the sanction and imprimatur of those in Dublin and those in the highest political offices.
To know what's really happening, subscribe to the Irish Examiner today at irishexaminer.com/subscribe.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Flimsy stand slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.
And just looking at it, Owen, I've thought about this sometimes, looking at it from the point of view, as you said, even the local Free State commanders and all the way up to the political masters and what have you, from their point of view, they had achieved in the War of Independence more, I think, as Michael Collins termed it, than had ever been achieved in 800 years while Britain occupied the country, or whatever way you want to put it. They'd achieved more than ever. They had a chance to establish something completely new that could only have been dreamt of within 6-7 years previously. Nobody would even dream it was possible. And yet, to their mind, the anti-treaty side wanted to smash that. And a lot of people would have suggested would have inevitably led to the re-entry of British forces into the country or into the Free State, because they would not have tolerated anything else. And they would not have tolerated anything that did not acquiesce to the treaty that had been signed. So they weren't just psychopaths, or they were not just people who were using terror for the sake of it. They were under extreme pressures themselves as well.
They were, and they were getting that too, and it must be said from the general public. And it has been pointed out, as I did in my own book, that, you know, the arrival of the Kerry, or the Dublin Guard in August 22 in Kerry was greeted with some relief by a war-weary population who had been through the First World War, who'd been through the War of Independence, and particularly in the business sector, I suppose. I mean, economic activity had already been through, or economic life and normal social life and so on had been through years of turmoil, and here now was a population again facing into months, if not years, of a civil war. So what's significant, I think, at the time as well, is there was significant revulsion locally in Kerry towards a campaign led by the IRA of disruption and disorder. And by that I mean, I suppose the IRA was increasingly realizing that it was unable to take on the Free State Army militarily, so to speak, or to dislodge them from the urban centres in the county. So what you do get at this time is a very significant campaign of disruption by the IRA, be that in terms of transport, such as the blowing up of bridges, the cutting of roads, the removal of railway lines, which in some cases had fatal consequences. In terms of communications, there's disruption of postal services, there's attacks on postal staff, some of which are detailed in the compensation claims subsequently submitted and which are held in the National Archives. So I think it would be important to point out that popular sentiment in Kerry at this time was not exclusively anti-Free State or anti-Cumann an Áil. On the contrary, I think there were many. And you can see this amongst claims from those that were trying to operate hotels, businesses, shops, which were being increasingly looted, attacked, you know, shopkeepers being kidnapped. Intimidation was very much a modus operandi for the IRA at this time. So, as I say, you can see a certain amount of pro-free state sentiment, not necessarily pro-treaty, but at least pro-government in the sense of wanting to bring this bloody conflict to an end. And I think that's significant enough. It's kind of forgotten, even though Republicans had a very strong election in August 23 in Kerry. Cumann na n-Éill did win 3 of the 7 seats, which was a reasonable showing in a county which had been so scarred by those atrocities. So there is a dual, you know, I think we, whatever about the politics of it, we need to drill down into the civilian attitudes to all of this. And a civilian population that was incredibly tired and really fed up of a continuation of all this sort of disruption.
Very true, Owen. And the other thing that arises is, did the nature of these outrages and the extent of them have any impact on bringing the conflict to an end? Or, as I've seen some people suggest, it was on its way out anyway, and that was not in any way influenced by these terrible outrages blowing up these people in this manner?
I think the war might have ended a little bit earlier in Kerry, but for the atrocities of March 23.
Right.
Now, admittedly, the war ended, by May anyway, and to some extent was petering out. But I think certainly the attacks on the IRA prisoners at Ballyseedy and Countessbridge and Bahux and Clashmelkin, which we haven't mentioned as well, which was another incident towards the very end of the war and followed by a number of other executions, must certainly and would have had the effect of terrifying the population, and I would suggest terrifying many in the IRA, that this was the fate that perhaps befell more prisoners if the war didn't come to an end. But had Knocknagoshal and what followed not occurred, I would suggest that maybe the war would have concluded somewhat earlier. It had the effect, even though, as I said, the civilian population will have been no doubt terrified by what occurred, of increased maybe retrenchment on the part of the IRA. And by April you have literally a fight on the coast of Kerry and on the Atlantic coast at Clashmelkin in caves overlooking the Atlantic, which kind of symbolizes the very, very last line of the war and you know, literally right on the verge of the country. But the, you know, and even after the war was over, I should say, there were a number of incidents through the summer and autumn of 23 and into 24, which were directly linked to the events of 22, 23. Paddy O'Daly and two other soldiers, for example, were implicated in the horrendous assault of two sisters in Kenmare, who were the daughters of the local doctor. Assault, and it is alleged possible sexual assault and rape of those two sisters. There's a Sergeant James Woods of the Civic Guard, who was the first sergeant in an Garda Síochána to be killed on duty, is killed in Scarta Glen later in 23, a hangover really from the Civil War period. So to some extent, I would suggest the Civil War was sort of going on in Kerry even after the fighting ended, if I could put it that way.
Right. Okay, and then we come to the sticky business of remembering afterwards. And I only discovered this recently, I'm sure you're well aware of it, Owen. But Stephen Fuller, the man you mentioned who escaped, he subsequently went on to serve, I know, one or two terms as a Fianna Fáil TD. He joined Fianna Fáil, as certain number of those on the anti-treaty side did, formed by Éamon de Valera, their political leader, the anti-treaty side. And then we come forward to 1959 and a major monument was unveiled at the spot of the Ballyseedy outrage. And the man who had been there on the night, whose 8 comrades had been blown to death, was not even invited on the stage. Why was that?
Well, Fuller, like many in the anti-treaty IRA and many on the anti-treaty side, went on to join Fianna Fáil when it was founded. And obviously that was much to the chagrin of many in Sinn Féin, who in their mind saw Fianna Fáil as traitors by entering the Dáil and participating in a parliament that they did not believe to have any legitimacy. Fuller was elected a Fianna Fáil TD in 1937 and remained in the Dáil until 1943. But as you say, when it came to the unveiling of the Ballyseedy monument, which many people listening, either from Kerry or from outside, may be familiar with, because it's in a very prominent roadside location and is probably one of, if not the largest, war monuments of its kind in the country. It was unveiled in 1959, and it was a local committee and many of the families involved who were involved in fundraising and providing for the monument. But Fuller wasn't invited to the unveiling, and of course that reflects the political tensions at the time between those in Sinn Féin who didn't, you know, neither recognised the state nor the government nor its parliament. And those in Fianna Fáil who'd embraced parliamentary democracy, like Fuller, despite what he had suffered during the Civil War, ironically, one of the speakers on the day that the monument was unveiled in 1959 was May Daly, as she was known from Fireys, who was one of the women who'd looked after Fuller and quote picked the grit and stones out of his back for weeks and months after he had survived the explosion. So I suppose. It is interesting to look at that sort of battle for the memory of the Civil War in Kerry, and certainly in many ways it infused Kerry politics and national politics indeed with a particular venom for generations which followed.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, but I mean that detail alone, it being such an outrage, it having such significance, and the one man who survived to tell the tale, who was effectively the only witness, obviously on the side of the victims, the perpetrators were there, of the whole thing, that he wasn't. And as I understand, he was actually in the crowd that day of his own volition. He came along to it, but
wasn't formally invited.
It beggars belief, quite frankly. Having said that, Owen, we see right up to today, and I've written about this in The Examiner, that there was some dispute over commemorating on the 5th of March this year, Ballyseedy, in that there's a Ballyseedy Commemoration Committee who organised for an event on Sunday the 5th. And I think this was confirmed by people in Sinn Féin, since they were approached by Sinn Féin and they were told, Sinn Féin people were told, it was going to be non-political. And local TD Pat Daly has said on RT that Mary Lou McDonald wanted to speak at it, so they decided to proceed with their own commemoration. 100 years later, there is still a hugely political element to claiming the dead, and in doing so, inferring that they knew which way these people would have gone had they survived.
Yes, it just shows you that 100 years on, Ballyseedy and the events in Kerry are as politically, challenging and difficult as perhaps they ever were. Now, I would suggest that there is certainly a greater appetite, I would say, to be more inclusive, if I could put it that way. I mean, Paddy Fuller, Stephen Fuller's son, was, for example, at the unveiling of a monument in Knocknagoshal, which was unveiled there many years ago, and that was noted as a significant gesture at the time. Nowadays, I think we have to, in terms of the spirit of commemoration, I think we have to respect all of those traditions, all of those parties that derive or claim to derive, you know, a lineage from those on the anti-treaty side during the Civil War. With the important proviso that those who lost their lives on the pro-treaty side are not forgotten as well, because Kerry men lost their lives in very significant numbers in the Free State Army in Kerry. There is, I think, Knocknagoshal, as far as I'm aware, is the only known monument to the Free State dead in Kerry, and would be quite unusual in the country as a monument to those who died on the Free State side. I think we have to look at the period in the round, and have to consider that in recent years we have the benefit of a significant tranche of new archive material and records from the combatants themselves, as well as from the survivors and their families, that illustrate really that there was no monopoly of suffering during the Civil War. That there was significant hardship on both sides of the conflict. And what strikes me as a historian, really, in going through all of that dreadfully difficult and tough material to read, is a great sadness that so many individuals and families suffered in this way. And I would respectfully suggest that perhaps the most meaningful way in which we could commemorate the Civil War is by collectively acknowledging as a state and as a society and as a body politic that dreadfully barbaric things were done on both sides of this conflict, and the legacy of suffering lasted for decades. And I think that would do much to support a spirit of healing and moving on, which I think we have, for the broad part, matured as a society that we can discuss these sort of things now without descending into political acrimony, I would hope.
Absolutely. And just a couple of things there. You mentioned Oktagosh, and as I saw somewhere, Jimmy Deanahan, former Fine Gael TD, far more importantly, former multiple All-Ireland winner for Kerry, but that's neither here nor there.
Yes.
Jimmy Deanahan, who obviously would have been coming from the Free State tradition, the Fine Gael tradition, he was involved with a group that they commemorated both at Knocknagoshal and Ballyseedy, which I think is, as you very eloquently put there, on it's the best way of all to move forward and just to remember the dead rather than anything else. But the other point you make is very valid too. The Free State soldiers, to some extent, have been the kind of, I think, a forgotten constituency. Like Fianna Fáil, which grew the anti-treaty side politically, was very much the biggest party in the country for 60, 70 years, and they nearly had a monopoly on remembering to that extent. And to some extent, now you've Sinn Féin, which is the biggest party, and they would identify that too. But all those Free State soldiers, there was very little acknowledgement on various levels of they also died in this awful conflict. And it could be argued to the extent that they died on what history would suggest was the right side.
Yeah, and many of them were incredibly young. Some of the accounts I've seen, you know, some of those that were on both sides of the country, now I hasten to add, but many Free State soldiers who were sent to Kerry and were from Kerry were 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. I write in the book about the case of two medical orderlies who were aged 18 and 20 with the army, who were on a boating trip in the lakes of Killarney and were shot by a sniper as they stepped onto Inishfallen Island. Those sort of incidents and attacks are perhaps forgotten in the narrative. And in many ways, not just were the Free State soldiers and their families forgotten, I think, by the state for many years, they were forgotten and neglected, I would go so far as to say, by successive governments, not just Fianna Fáil governments, but by those of the Cumann na n-Éill Fine Gael tradition. And I'm talking there about the pension applications, in which many of them, for years, having fought to, you know, defend the state against the anti-treaty IRA, were begging and begging the state for some sort of financial support in the years after the Civil War. They were battling significant mental health problems, trauma, nervous breakdown, admissions to psychiatric hospitals, financial hardship, poverty, emigration. And, you know, again, no more than those on the anti-treaty side were denied access to pensions for many years until Fianna Fáil came to power. Certainly the Free State government for the first decade in its existence did very, very little to support those who had gone out to fight to defend the treaty and defend the new state. So I would respectfully suggest that there's no party or party representatives that can sort of claim that they covered themselves in glory in terms of their treatment of combatants on either side of the conflict.
Very true. And I think as well, one of the most important things about it is that we do remember it, because as we've seen elsewhere in the world and in recent years even, we might often think the past is a different country, as they say, but sometimes we realise, unfortunately, that it ain't that distant as we might think. So it is very important that we remember to ensure there's never any repeat of anything like that. Owen, thank you very much for joining us. The book, folks, and I have to say, I read it over Christmas. I ate it over Christmas. It's fascinating reading. No Middle Path, The Civil War in Kerry, and it's published by Merrion Press. Owen, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you too, Mick.
That's it, folks, for today. As always, thanks to our engineer, JJ Vernon. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with you again soon. Stay well.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.